Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's December the 18th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. He's in New Market, Indiana, and then a bit closer to the bottom of the hour, K-State University's Mike Wolverton will join us to take up the energy markets. Along the way, we'll get the agricultural news from your Director of Ag Programming here at the stations, Dave Dickey, and I'll update you on the month of January winter meeting season, all kinds of extension programs going on, and I'll host several of them. We'll talk about the Crop Protection Technology Conference, the Corn and Soybean Classic Series, and the Midwestern Organic Production and Marketing Conference. It all happens right here on this Tuesday edition of WILL AM 580's Closing Market Report. Taking a look now at the numbers in Chicago as they settled on this Tuesday afternoon. Futures like this, the nearby March contract in the wheat futures at $9.52, down 14 today. May futures off 15 and a quarter at $9.46. And the July futures finished a penny lower at $7.69.5. March corn at $4.32, down 6 and 3 quarters for the day. May at $4.42 and 3 quarters, down 7. July at $4.50 and a quarter, off 7. And December contract down 2 and a quarter at $4.48 and a quarter. Jan beans at $11.49 and 3 quarters, down 7. The March down 7.5 at $68.5. And the May at $11.83. 3.5 down 6 cents. Next year's Noves at 10.53, up 5 and 3 quarters. January bean meal at 3.22.50, down 2.20. January bean oil at 46.21. That was 4 cents higher for the day. Live cattle at the Mercantile Exchange settled the nearby December contract 30 cents higher at 93.17.5. The Jan feeder cattle at 105.15, up $1.47.5. And the February lean hogs at 59.82.5, 57.5 cents higher for the afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look what happened to the Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Happy holidays to you, Wayne. Let's talk about what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade first on this Tuesday afternoon. Tell me what you saw on what I suppose you'd call a turnaround Tuesday.
Well, you know, I think it had been 12 sessions in a row that we'd finished higher in corn and beans here coming into today, Todd. And so today would be a little bit of a turnaround Tuesday in the respect that we did finish lower in both the all the months of the corn and the front months of the beans and the front months of the wheat, Todd. So I guess we did turn around. I would say it's more of a pause or a temporary high and a setting into the holiday sideways trade here and a little bit of profit taking before the end of the year, especially in the wheat where we saw the old crop, new crop spreads being unwound and some real profit taking happening there.
A little bit of a respite. This is very unusual for the holiday. As we usually go into the holidays, very quiet trade, but I suppose next week it could mean some things are very volatile.
Well, I mean, you know, as we look at things, the fund, the index fund level of commitment as far as number of trades on is very big. We're continuing to see an improvement in the South American weather forecast, the weakness you know, in some of the markets, as we look at that, because of that situation and the weather getting a little better, where we've felt that it was a little bit nervous whether South America, Argentina especially, was going to be growing as good a crop as they were looking for. Seeing that China is maybe setting back a little bit as trying to keep their inflation under control, not being quite as aggressive in their purchasing program right now, and also trying to hold costs down by, you know, auctioning off some of the stuff in their local markets that way. So all of that put together with the market length that we've seen in some areas, we could see some wide swings one more time.
Any reason you think to be bearish at this point about the commodity markets other than the best cure for high prices has generally been said to be high prices?
Well, I think that's probably the right answer, Todd. I mean, there's still the idea that corn doesn't want to give up any more acres than what's estimated is going to change right now, and that beans would like a few more acres, number one. Number two, we're hearing that there was maybe a little more wheat planted down south in the Arkansas, Mississippi, Louisiana, Georgia area, even as late as Thanksgiving or after, that might not have been considered in some of the guesstimates or reports for that that's out there. So that might be taking some acreage away that maybe went to corn last year, but it'll be wheat and double crop beans this year. But all in all, you know, the inflationary factors there, these are, you know, just some tremendously high prices, Todd. And as you said, there could be some backing away as to, at these prices, being a little bit of rationing happen along the way. So, you know, we did see, I think, South Korea backed away from their tender overnight. They didn't take any of their corn they were tending for, citing high prices as things go along that way.
We appreciate you being with us for the day.
Thank you, Todd.
Wayne Nelson's with L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Bob Baesdefer in Danville at 217-477-6016. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Dave Dickey is here now. He'll take us through the agricultural news for the afternoon. This is the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.
In agricultural news, the World Trade Organization opened an investigation yesterday into whether U.S. subsidy programs violate international trade rules. The WTO set up a panel to rule in the dispute brought by Brazil and Canada, which claim direct payments for row crops are trade distorting and belong in the amber box counted against subsidy limits. Brazil's complaint also includes U.S. subsidy payments for ethanol production. Lawmakers must pass a new omnibus appropriations bill before recessing on Friday. Democrats have agreed to stick to the president's budget limit, but will not likely dovetail with White House spending priorities. The GOP may oppose the bill if appropriations are not close to that requested by the administration. The bill also has implications for agriculture. Jonna Miller is with the AFBF, and she has this report.
The big work for Congress this week will be passing the $515 billion omnibus spending bill. The omnibus is all sorts of domestic spending bills rolled into one and contains provisions for agriculture, including an extension of the current farm bill.
Programs that needed to be reauthorized, for example, the dairy program, that program will continue running smoothly even though we don't have a new farm bill yet. So that's very important. However, it also means that when farmers go in to visit their FSA offices this winter, even though we have an extension through March 15th, they're not going to be able to sign up for new programs for their 08 crop yet until we have a new farm bill signed into place.
American Farm Bureau farm policy specialist Tara Smith says the omnibus bill also includes provisions for disaster assistance.
It takes the disaster package that was passed in May for the 05 and the 06 crops, and it extends that to include the 07 crops. Farmers will still only be able to choose 1 year of 05, 06, and 07, but it will cover crops and livestock.
Smith thinks Congress will find a way to pass the bill.
This is a must-do piece of legislation, and if they don't get it done, they have to do a continuing resolution to keep the government running, basically. So they are going to be working very hard.
Jonna Miller, Washington.
The U.S. has signed a new global pact that potentially one day may combat climate change. The pact offers few specifics but calls for signees to continue negotiations. The four-page agreement followed days of deadlock at a United Nations conference where the U.S. was repeatedly accused by other nations of blocking programs. The new pact commits the U.S. and roughly 190 other nations to begin talks on a new treaty to replace one expiring in 2012, one which the U.S. did not sign. Walmart, Costco, Target, Safeway, and Wild Oats are being sued by organic milk drinkers who say the retailers committed consumer fraud by selling milk labeled organic that was not. The suit focuses on Aurora Organic Dairy. The company recently made changes to its practices after a USDA investigation found more than a dozen violations of organic standards. Mark Hastel of the Cornucopia Institute in Wisconsin was one of the first to investigate Aurora Dairy.
Not only were they not pasturing their animals, but they were also bringing in illegal conventional cows into the operations. The USDA then investigated and came to the same conclusion, except they didn't ban them from organic production. This is a $100 million organization that the USDA described the violations as being, quote, willful. In other words, they knew they were cheating. They did it anyways. And the most egregious violation that the USDA cited was selling milk between 2002 and 2007 labeled as organic that didn't legally qualify as being organic milk.
The suit seeks class action status and asks for customers' money back, as well as punitive damages and attorney fees. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your director of agricultural programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. And one other website that you should visit, that's www.ipm.uiuc.edu. It's ipm.uiuc.edu. Once you get there, you'll find a link for IPM conferences. It will tell you all about the Crop Protection Technology Conference that's coming up January the 9th and the 10th. And the Corn and Soybean Classic Series. I will MC both of those events and would like to see you at either or both of them coming up in the month of January. The second one, January the 14th, for the Corn and Soybean Classic Series begins in Rend Lake. I'll be on the road with a crop production specialist from the University of Illinois, along with a couple of ag economists. I believe Gary Schnitke and Daryl Good will be on the road with us at Rend Lake, January the 14th at the Conference Center in Springfield at the Crown Plaza on Tuesday the 15th. In Moline at the iWireless Center, that's formerly the Mark in Moline, on the 16th. The 17th will be at Kishwaukee College in Malta, Illinois, and we'll wrap up our week-long event January the 18th, these day-long seminars in Bloomington at the Interstate Center. It should be a great, great conference. If you've never seen one of these in action, I am telling you now to visit ipm.uiuc.edu and get pre-registered. Pre-registration closes for the event on December the 22nd. This is a really good show. It's been in existence now for 10 years, and this will be our 11th season on the road. Five stages this year, all day long, crop production, the specialist on campus talking to you about what's been happening in your fields. And the most important thing is that those specialists will be there all day long, and they're only on stage for half an hour. If you have questions about entomology or weed sciences or econ, you'll have the chance and the ability to talk to these individual professors, the specialists from the U of I, if you'd like to, in person, by yourself. It's right there on the IPM website. You can register today. Don't forget to do it because registration, pre-registration at least, closes December the 22nd, though you can walk in at the door if you'd like. Pre-registration at ipm.uiuc.edu. Up next, we'll talk about another conference that's coming up on campus. It's called the Midwest Organic Production and Marketing Conference. Its audience is a little different than the Corn and Soybean Classic Series, so it's okay that it's exactly at the same time, or at least a couple of those, right here, the 17th and 18th, in the Illini Union. The Midwest Organic Production and Marketing Conference is the rebadged and now multi-state Illinois Conference. This year, it's co-sponsored by Extension at the University of Illinois and Purdue.
So we're in two states now. So we're gonna rotate it back and forth. Next year, it's going to be in Indiana. But this year, it's in Illinois, and it's right here on campus at the Illini Union.
That is Dan Anderson. He's one of the conference coordinators. The Midwest Organics Conference is a two-day affair scheduled for January 17 and 18. He's been doing this for a while and says the 2008 event has one of the best programs ever put together for the show.
Had a lot of help from the Indiana folks in just tracking down some good speakers. And I don't know, more heads working on it, and I think we came up with a better program. We've got some farmers coming, in Illinois and Indiana, talking about organic dairying. We have two keynote speakers. One is Tim LaSalle. He's the new CEO of the Rodale Institute, coming, and we have Mark Castell from the Cornucopia Institute.
Anderson says Mark Castell's dynamic speaking style, combined with the Cornucopia Institute's reputation as an organics watchdog, make him perhaps the most provocative speaker in the country on issues related to agriculture, organics, and small farms.
January 17th, 18th, so it's two full days. That includes an organic reception the evening of the 17th. We're going to have some local entertainment and then also some local and all-organic food. And it's $95 a person before January 7th. After that, it's $145 per person. We have a special $25 for students. That's for both days, so big discount for students, $25 a student to come. We want to draw as many students as we can that are interested. So, and another thing is that I want to point out, our keynote sessions, we're opening those up for anybody to come in for free. We especially want professors on campus to come. Feel free to come to those for free, and then if they want to stay for the rest of the conference, they can register at the door, but they can come to the keynotes for free.
The Midwest Organic Production and Marketing Conference keynote addresses are scheduled for 2 p.m. January 17 and 12:30 p.m. January the 18th. For full details, search Google for Midwest Organic Production and Marketing Conference. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. It's a Tuesday afternoon. This is the Closing Market Report. Time now for our weekly look at the energy markets. Mike Wolverton, K-State grain analyst, is with us this afternoon. Mike, thanks for being with us.
Good to be here, Todd.
I hear that you have done some research on cellulosic ethanol and that you're making a presentation, in fact, today on that. Can you tell us a little bit about what you're presenting this afternoon?
I'm presenting, making a presentation on the economics of cellulosic ethanol, and this is not based on research I've done, but I've gathered research others have done. We're at a really early stage at this, and so these numbers are just preliminary, but at least gives us an idea of what we're dealing with and what the potential problems might be.
And what kind of numbers are you throwing?
Well, first of all, I looked at the possibility of replacing imported oil, at least the fuel part of gasoline, diesel, and biodiesel or diesel fuel, with production of biofuels, and according to my numbers, we can't do that. There simply is not enough biomass material available to replace all the imported oil. What we can do is replace part of it, and that's kind of what we're starting to do already with ethanol.
So how large a portion do you think that is possible to do, and I don't know whether you've split it up between corn-based ethanol and cellulosic ethanol or combined the two together or just done cellulosic. How much of the supply do you think could be feasibly replaced?
Well, I looked at both the corn-based, the grain-based, and the cellulose-based ethanol production. And we're already replacing about 5% of the gasoline in 2007. Next year in 2008, we'll replace about 8% of the gasoline with ethanol. And so we're already making some progress here. But there's an upper limit on how much ethanol we can produce with grain as a substitute for gasoline. And that limit's probably about 15 billion gallons. We'll be at around 12 to 13 billion gallons next year, so not a lot of potential left for the grain-based ethanol. So soon we're going to have to start looking very seriously at producing ethanol from cellulosic material, and the problem there is just how much cellulosic material we can generate on the land that we have available.
Have you done some numbers on what might be available for land, and did you figure CRP acres or something else that would be available as opposed to row crop production?
I did look at CRP acres, and we're going to have a release of CRP acres, but it's only going to be about 1 million acres per year for the foreseeable future. Most of the CRP land that's coming up, the contracts are expiring, is going back into CRP. But what I'm going to be telling the group this afternoon is that if we're going to expand the amount of cellulose produced that will be available for ethanol production, we're going to have to take that land away from some other crops, and it's going to be difficult to bid that land away given the prices we're seeing for grains and oilseeds.
So you're really telling them that cellulosic ethanol at this point does not appear to be economically feasible?
Well, no, it isn't. Only with fairly large government subsidies we'll be able to generate cellulosic ethanol. But this new energy bill that's coming through looks like it might give us some of those subsidies. The proposal now is to subsidize cellulosic ethanol production by $1.25 per gallon for up to 1 billion gallons. And I think that might give the industry a kickstart.
Enough of a kickstart that you think... Well, it'll give the industry a kickstart, but how are we going to do it? What's possible at this point, or is the money that's going to be out there dangling, I guess, enough to generate the kind of science that it will take to put cellulosic ethanol into a position where it can actually be produced?
I think that you put your finger on the key, and that is the scientific research. We need just to improve the process efficiency in turning cellulose into ethanol, and we're starting to do that. There's a lot of research being done, and I think over time we will make this product, cellulosic ethanol, a viable economic possibility, but it's not going to be soon, and it won't be easy.
Do you believe that it will be additive to the supply of available fuel so that corn-based ethanol will reach out to the 15 billion gallon and then cellulosic above that and replace imported crude oil?
I think that's exactly what's going to happen. I've talked to ethanol plant managers, and what they're telling me is that they're going to continue to use corn as the base for ethanol production, and as cellulose comes on stream, that'll just be added to their stream of raw materials to turn into ethanol. And so I think we're going to take grain-based ethanol up to the 15 billion gallons, maybe beyond, depending on the demand. Then if we want to get a big bump up, then we're going to have to go to cellulosic ethanol.
And I've got a couple of questions on ethanol as it is, but maybe you could give us your bottom line on the presentation this afternoon, or have we got it already?
Well, I think a couple things just to kind of summarize. I think the cellulosic ethanol plants will be small. It's going to be difficult to achieve economies of size, which will keep the per unit cost relatively high. And I think without the subsidies or UCI's mandate, it's going to be difficult for this industry to develop further.
And then finally, a question on current conditions in the ethanol industry. We've had a couple of folks on over the last week that are don't see a very bright future for ethanol over the next 6 to 8 months. What do you see at the plant sites, that is?
Well, I think it depends on two things. First of all, the price of ethanol and the price of corn. If we see the price of corn come down a little bit, that will improve the profit margins. I think the big factor we have to look for here is declining oil prices bringing down the price of ethanol. And so it will probably put a squeeze on these ethanol manufacturers, there's no doubt.
Mike, we appreciate you being with us today.
Good to be here, Todd.
Mike Wolverton is with K-State, where he's a grain analyst for Extension, somebody from K-State, or a couple of other places. Joins us each and every Tuesday to take a weekly look at the energy markets. In about 2 minutes, I'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Don Day about the weather, your regional newscast. Well, that one comes up next. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is WILL AM 580. I'm Todd Gleason. We're joined this afternoon to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast by Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon to you, Don.
Good afternoon.
Hey, after a pretty rough weekend last weekend, it sure looks like things are going to warm up, and the white Christmas we thought we were going to have just might disappear here in parts of the Midwest.
Well, maybe. We're going to see two systems come out of the Plain States, one this weekend and another one probably right after Christmas, that may bring some wintry weather back to the area. One thing it's looking likely is the western Corn Belt this weekend, notably eastern areas of Nebraska, Iowa, Minnesota, western Missouri, and eastern Kansas. They could be under the gun for some wintry conditions, sharply colder temperatures, and some snow this weekend. The Midwest east of there, as you get into Illinois, Indiana, Ohio may stay on the warm side of the system, and hence that warmer weather that's coming our way. But the western areas may have a much different situation.
And different in terms of a lot of snowfall, just a lot of cold weather, what kind of things?
Well, probably moderate snow amounts, probably in the neighborhood of about 3 to 6 inches or so. But it could be a lot colder. Latest charts are really bringing in some very cold air into the Dakotas, Nebraska, and Iowa on the backside of the system for Sunday and Monday. And that will be then heading east-northeast into the upper Great Lakes. Now, eventually, some of that colder weather, probably early next week, will slip into the rest of the Corn Belt, but the worst of the winter weather stays on the western side of the corn areas.
So we're talking, what, 20s and 30s for that part of the world, and maybe something, I think I see some temperatures that are pretty high for eastern Illinois.
Right, even warmer then, but do expect it to be cooler early next week, and then this pattern going to be active. There will be more systems coming through all the way up into the new year.
And tell me a little bit about what's been happening in the South American world of agriculture.
Well, they are going to be getting more rain in Brazil. The rain pattern there has been very persistent so far this spring, now entering into their summer season down there. And there's more moisture coming, especially in the central and north central and southwest areas of Brazil. Northern Argentina is getting some of this moisture. Most of Argentina doesn't seem to be getting as much moisture, and they don't get as much with this next round of moisture we do see, but they'll get some. So right now, moisture conditions in South America looking good.
And what do you see for Australia?
Well, they've had some rain, and they're going to get more, especially here between now and Christmas time. Central, eastern, and southeastern, and some of the west central areas of Australia have some good chances for moisture. In fact, some forecast charts have above normal moisture for the next 2 weeks over the central and eastern areas of Australia.
Any place else we ought to check in around the world that's having unique weather forecasts?
Well, it is getting colder over in eastern Asia, over into China. They are starting to see some intrusions of much colder, more wintry weather conditions there. And we will see some stormy weather in China, but some moisture. And in the winter wheat areas of the U.S., they finally got some moisture last couple of weeks, and they may get some out of these systems coming out of the Rockies later this week and next.
Don, we appreciate you being with you, and we won't talk with you for a couple of weeks, so have a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Talk to you next year.
Okay, thanks much. That's Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joined us here every Tuesday on the Closing Market Report right here on AM 580. Be sure to tune in tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our first in-depth look at the day's markets. And remember, you can listen to today's futures analysis and weather reports right there on the web at WILLAG.org. That's WILLAG.org. I'm Todd Gleason.